Welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women over 50 across the globe. You don't have to be a Mother Teresa to make an impact on the world. Sometimes the small acts and achievements can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh, sometimes they may make you cry, and they will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing the fabulous Mimi Anderson. Mimi started running in 1999 at the age of 36 and has raced all over the world. She's run in deserts and mountains, the amazing Peruvian jungle, she's conquered freezing temperatures in the Arctic and set a record in one of the hottest places on Earth. In 2008, she set a female Guinness World Record for running the length of the United Kingdom, all 840 miles. Last year, Mimi ran 1,969 kilometres, I'm feeling exhausted just reading this, across the Freedom Trail in South Africa, an adventure she loved. Some of Mimi's amazing achievements. 2007 Extreme Ultra Marathon, 352-mile self-sufficiency non-stop race in the Arctic. Overall winner and course record holder. Physical Endeavour Award 2013. She ran the Namibian Desert Challenge in 2010, which was 220 kilometres over 5 days and was the overall race winner. And world record holder for M2M in 2012, running 345 miles top to bottom of Ireland in 3 days, 15 hours and 36 minutes. Mimi, welcome, and thank you for being willing to be interviewed on Creating Ripples.
Oh, thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Can you tell us a bit about, because I'm aware of a little bit about the background of how and why you started running. Would you like to share that with us?
Yes, I mean, it's quite simple, actually. I used to go to the gym quite a lot after having two children. And I got quite bored, actually, of doing aerobics and, you know, doing all of that sort of thing. And I never liked the shape of my legs. So somebody said, well, the quickest way to do that is to go running. And, you know, in those days, you didn't see lots of people running around the streets or that. It just really wasn't done, especially sort of women. So I got on a treadmill and I huffed and puffed. My way. I literally couldn't run for more than a couple of minutes without sort of, you know, really struggling to breathe. And eventually I got up to a mile, which I think I did in about 10 minutes. I was so pleased with myself. And then I built it up and I got up to about 3 miles. And once I did 3 miles, I thought, well, that's it. I am now a qualified runner. And then somebody suggested that I go and join them on a 10-mile run outside.
Wow.
And, it was really odd, actually, because I thought, outside? Do people actually run outside? I just thought people ran on the treadmill, because I never saw anybody running outside. And it was 7 miles that I'd ever done more than I'd done before. Anyway, I went and did it, and it was along the Cuckoo Trail in East Sussex. Loved it.
Really?
Absolutely loved it. I felt free. I felt as if my feet had been given these wings.
Gosh.
And I could just fly.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it was a lovely, lovely feeling, and I've never looked back.
It's very different. I mean, I tend to do the cross trainer on the gym.
Yeah.
I've come to running a little too late in my mid-50s. I find it's a little hard on the ankles and the hips and the knees. But it is cushioned on a treadmill, isn't it? I mean, it's quite hard on the road. So did you notice a big difference? Did your body react?
No, I find actually the running, I have a different running style on the treadmill, so I run slightly differently on the treadmill. So, no, well, I was running on trail rather than road for the first thing, but it was lovely.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely lovely. It was just, I mean, I ached the next morning, don't get me wrong, I could hardly get out of bed the next morning because my legs were so sore, but it was a huge sense of achievement. You know, if you think a few months ago, I could hardly breathe, you know, and now I was able to run 10 miles, so, I was chuffed to bits.
I bet, because we see a lot of fun runs, don't we? You know,
yes.
For cancer, you know, 10K or what have you, or the moonwalk, which is, you know, a
all
fast
fantastic,
walk, all
absolutely.
Amazing. But it is about coming out of your comfort zone, isn't it? So, and actually proving to yourself that you can do something that you don't think you can do. And just once we put our minds to it and really focus on really what we're capable of doing.
Absolutely. I think people, a sort of everybody is capable of achieving a lot more than they actually give themselves credit for. But it's having that motivation. So whether it's doing a 5K race for life or going for a walk, doesn't matter what it is. Mm. It's just starting to get fit and feel a bit better about yourself.
Amazing. But you know, getting up to a mile on the treadmill in the gym and running the Namibian desert, Mimi, are two very different things. tell us about what was going on inside your head that went from, okay, you know, 10K outside is lovely, I feel really alive, the Cuckoo Trail, you know, this is, I feel free, it's fantastic, to the amaze. I mean, there's a big leap from that, which was where most people maybe stop, they might run, you know, be part of a running group, to the things that you've achieved. So tell us about where did that switch come from?
Well, do you know, I don't know. I didn't even know I had that switch. It's quite extraordinary. I mean, I was quite competitive at school, I suppose, with my running, but without realising it. Not running, but I did team sports at school. I think it all started, really, because I started entering races. So I did a few half marathons, which I loved. And then one of my running friends came into the gym one day, and I'll never forget, I was doing this leg extension on exercise, and she came and she handed me the magazine, because in those days most people didn't have computers at home, they just, you know, they were too expensive. And she said, "I found our next race, Mimi." And it read, "Marathon des Sables, 250-kilometre self-sufficiency stage race in the Sahara Desert." And I remember the picture was you know, these guys in agony running across the desert. And I remember one particular picture was this disgusting sort of blistered foot. And I thought, ooh, so why can't we do that? You know, it's sort of, I just thought, God, it's such an adventure. I've never, you know, I have three children at that stage.
Wow.
And I thought, I've never had an adventure like that. I've never done anything like that. I've never even tried anything like that. So why can't I do that? So I did say to her, "Don't tell my husband. I'll do a bit of a Google, you know, find out about it." And in those days, you had to send off for all the information. So I did. I sent off for all the information, and then I had to sit him down and say, "This is what I want to do." And I think it was a case at the time. You know, he was very good. Because this was a bit of a shock to him. And he did say, you know, "I'll absolutely go ahead, I will support you, and we'll do all of that." But I think underneath it all, he was thinking, she won't even get to the start line, it's all right, she'll do the training. But she, well, I think it was such a contrast. You know, I liked my makeup, I liked my nice clothes, I liked my hair being done. And then suddenly I was putting myself in the middle of a desert where I can't wash for 7 days. You stay in the same kit. And I remember when I was 9, my father gave me this bit of paper and he said, look, and I wrote on it in different colours, I hate camping. So my dad said, "So what are you going to do now? You're going to camp, Mimi." You know,
I'm with you on that one. I hate camping too.
But I loved it. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, it was hard. I was very ill during the race. Mm. I had to have 5 bags of intravenous drip at day three.
Jeepers.
So by the time I got back to the tent, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and then we had the long day, which was 50 miles plus the following day. But I finished it. I did finish it. And my medal, I slept with that medal for a few days. Yeah.
I mean, the sense of achievement must have been
it was immense.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was fantastic. And even now, actually, you know, I think about it and it makes me feel quite emotional, because you can remember those emotions
of course, and
how you felt. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I did a trek in Nepal, first time in my life I'd ever been camping, talking about baptism by fire, you know, nothing to wash, and we all got ill and the loo was a hole in the ground.
Yeah,
but despite all of that, it was a sense of, you know, and I walked 100 miles in 8 days. I mean, please, I mean,
not being in comparison,
but for me, it was a big achievement, and I still remember. And the bad bits disappeared, don't they?
Very quickly.
Oh my gosh, I actually did that.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And also the bad bits, though, will then make you, I think, then make you stronger.
Yeah.
For the next time, because, you know, mentally you become stronger because you know how to deal with those bad moments. So it's all a learning curve
and
a growing curve.
And women are incredibly resilient and adaptable.
Yes.
And we do, and very malleable, and we do adjust and actually just get on with it in whatever situation we find ourselves in, don't we? We're incredibly
I agree. Well, I think that's also
that.
having children. I don't know, not necessarily maybe. Just having children, but I think that helps, you know, family, yeah. working. Yeah. I just think actually we're better at multitasking and, yeah. You know, we don't mind if plans change, whereas, yeah. you know, perhaps the men aren't quite as adaptable. Yeah.
So. There's a great quote I love from Nancy Reagan, women are like tea bags. We find our strength when we're put in hot water.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. Though.
It's
yeah.
so true. Can you tell us about a game changer in your life, something that's made you kind of press the pause button, stop and think, and that has had an influence on who you are and the decisions that you've made?
Yes, this was a difficult one, actually, but the one that sort of instantly, for me, sprung to mind was actually during the Marathon des Sables. And, you know, as I said, I'd had 5 bags of intravenous drip at the end of the third day. I was feeling, I mean, I wasn't feeling in a good place at all. I wasn't able to keep any food down or fluids down, so I was really struggling. But I wasn't allowed to have any more drips in the race because I would be disqualified, and I was Gosh. As part of a team. So the plan on the long day, which was the following day, was to get to a certain checkpoint, which is about halfway through the day, where we would have something to eat, and then we would continue. So we finish the long stage, so we would have a nice recovery day the next day. And I remember coming up to this checkpoint, and I was behind the other 2 girls. It was dark at this stage. You could see all the lights going off into the distance, everybody's head torches, and this checkpoint never got closer. You could see it, but it never got closer. And these beautiful lights going up and over the, sort of the sand dunes. I mean, it was quite spectacular. And I was walking along with my poles, and I just had tears rolling down my cheeks. I felt awful. And I think it was the first time I ever thought, do you know, I don't think I can do this. Perhaps I have bitten off more than I can chew. And Max, one of my teammates, she came up to me and she checked that I was all right. And she just looked at me and she just said, think of all those people at home who think you're going to fail. And she walked off. And I thought, well, do you know, absolutely. Now, that could have killed me. It could have actually flattened me into whatever it was. But for me, I thought, do you know, she's absolutely right. There are people at home who really, really don't think that I can do this. And I sure as hell am not going home without that medal. And that was it. I mean, it wasn't easy, but that was it. And I just sort of, wow. I remember I pulled myself together. And as a team, we got to that finish line. And those words stayed with me ever since. Every time I have a bad moment or whatever, I just think, dear Mimi, just think of all those people who think you're going to fail. So perhaps a bit harsh, but for me, it worked. And, you know.
Yeah, and it's sometimes the kind of the sympathetic, you can do it, that, which does have its place in the can work, but sometimes it's that shock treatment, isn't it, that can really get us going.
Absolutely, because there was no point giving me sympathy.
No.
You know, she checked on us all right. No, it wasn't going to help. And I think she knew me well enough to know.
It's knowing the character, isn't it?
Yeah.
That your character, you had that competitive spirit, you had that fighting spirit, and you had that determination and the drive to actually prove... prove the cynics wrong.
Absolutely. I do remember though getting to the checkpoint, and my teammates were fantastic. They said, right, get in your sleeping bag, Mimi, we're going to make you a cup of tea. And I remember getting into my sleeping bag, and you know, they were making food, and somebody gave me sort of a cup of tea, which we all have to boil ourselves, there's no fires there to do it for us. And you know, I drank a couple of sips of that, and then everything just sort of came out, and I thought, okay, this is not good. So I had to go back to the doctors to go and get a pill to stop me being sick. So, but those words have stayed with me all the way through my running life, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So. And there's a great amount of satisfaction. I mean, it's lovely. It's wonderful to get the support. And you say your husband was very supportive. And we need that support as well. We need people to believe in us and to encourage us when sometimes we don't believe in ourselves. But sometimes that kind of stab where it gets you, and it's that kind of wake-up call. It's like an electric shock in the body. You think, hey, hang on a minute, I'll be the one who decides whether or not I can do this, nobody else. And sometimes it can be incredibly motivating, can't it?
Yeah, and it worked for me. It might not work for somebody else, but you know, because it is quite a cruel thing to have done. But she didn't mean it in a cruel way. She just said that she knew me quite well, so she knew that you know, and I did have to pull myself together. And anyway, so it worked. So there we go.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. So with the amazing achievements that you've already had, which is, it was just phenomenal. And I was reading through the whole list. I thought, how do I pick some of these? I say, oh my God, I'm feeling exhausted. My half an hour on the cross trainer at gym is now feeling hugely inadequate. You said you were off soon to Greece. I mean, what's happening now in your life with the running? And what, it's got you to an amazing point. You've had amazing achievements. What else is there for you to do? Where are you now with all of this?
So much to do. So much to do. That's the trouble, isn't it? I think, you know, I'm now 53. So, you know, competing against, you know, women who are 20 years younger than me and sort of 100 milers and things, you know, it's quite tough. It is tough because, you know, they train very differently now to things. So, but I still do that. I like the longer races. So as you said, I'm going to Greece in about a week's time, where I'm taking part in something called the Spartathlon, which is the most iconic race in the ultra running world.
Gosh.
And it's basically, and I always get his name wrong actually, Philippides, I think, is the Greek messenger. He was sent by the Athenians to go to Sparta to tell the Spartans that they wanted to have a little bit of a, you know, a bit of a war. And the Spartans turned around and said, well, not this week, because you know, we've got a festival going on. So he then had to run back and he died. And the race was then actually started by a guy called John Foden, who's an English RAF guy, and he basically wanted to know, was it possible to run the 153 miles that this messenger did. And hence the race was born.
So,
you know, but it's a tough race. You know, you have to do the first 80 miles has to be done in under 9.5 hours. There are 74 checkpoints along the route. Every single checkpoint has got a cutoff, so you're constantly chasing cutoffs.
Good grief. And what's the terrain like?
It's road, except for when you get to the 100 miles, there's a sort of a mountain you have to sort of go up and over.
Okay, she says in a passway comment.
Well, I hate that. I don't mind the up bit, but the down bit is on this sort of zigzag sort of, well, I suppose it's rocks, scree. It's not too bad, actually. It's not very long, but it's about 5K, I think. But no, it's an amazing race. You've got about 350, 360 competitors, and everybody has to qualify. And it's now so popular that it's a lottery.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It's a lottery system. So once you've qualified, you then have to wait for your, you know. But they have 25 competitors from each of the countries. So, but my plan is, I tried it actually in 2013, because I did the race in 2011, where I actually placed third lady. So this time, my aim is to do as well as I can in the race, and then fingers crossed, if I succeed with the race, I will then turn round and run all the way back to Athens. So that's my plan.
Of course you will, maybe.
No females to you?
Sounds perfectly reasonable to me.
See, I quite enjoy that bit, actually. But I've still got to do it in under the 36 hours, you know, so the 36, that's the plan.
Okay.
Plans obviously are adaptable and can change, as we all know. So, so that's where I am.
Yeah, I had a wonderful phrase from a friend years ago, if you want to make God laugh, make a plan.
Yes, absolutely.
But, that's amazing. We were chatting briefly before we started the interview, and you were saying that you suffer with asthma.
Yes, yeah.
So how do you manage that with such an incredibly tough physical challenge that you give yourself?
Well, I'm quite lucky, actually. I mean, at the moment, I'm on pills and potions because I've got a sort of chest infection. So actually, it makes running virtually impossible, actually. It's all right on the flat, but as soon as you start going uphill, forget it. I'm quite lucky, actually, because my medication, I go and get checked out regularly by the doctors and the nurses and things, just to make sure that I am keeping it under control. So on the whole, 90% of the time, actually, it's sort of all right. And I always carry an inhaler with me. Okay. So I'm quite lucky. My peak flow is rubbish, but I'm quite lucky. I seem to manage on it. So.
Has it made a difference to you? Obviously, with running, it must increase your lung capacity and your cardiovascular health. Has that had an impact on the asthma? Has it made it better?
I think it's made it a bit better, yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't really think about my asthma until I then get a chest infection.
Oh, sure.
And then you suddenly think, God, actually, you know, it's quite, you know, it is very dangerous, asthma. You know, we forget. This is why, you know, if I, you know, I'll put something on Twitter saying, don't forget to go and have, you know, your asthma checked, because, you know, you can die of it. People forget how dangerous it is.
It is, yeah. But it doesn't have to be something that can debilitate you. I think a lot of people, because my mum suffered very badly from asthma, and I think it can create a lot of fear in asthma sufferers, can't it? So you are living proof that it doesn't actually have to stop you from doing
anything. And I think Paula Radcliffe is an asthmatic and various others. So it's if you control it, keep it under control, keep the symptoms under control, and are sensible.
And respect it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, never, never let anything put you off.
Yeah, well, yes. This is becoming obvious maybe that nothing stops you from doing, which is amazingly inspirational.
Can you tell us
about perhaps another game changer in your life, something else that's kind of made you stop in your tracks? And
well, this one's a slightly different story. I go and give sort of talks to schools and various things, and this one particular occasion I was giving a talk to prep school and about my Arctic race and a couple of other things. And there was a little girl at the front who was about 8 years old, and she was very small, and she was all curled up on her chair, and she had a thumb in her mouth for the whole time and looked as if she was fast asleep. And I thought, oh my God, you know, I'm boring her. And when afterwards, you know, they were asking me lots of questions and everything, this little girl then put up her hand. And she said, you know, well, when I grow up, she said, can I do what you do? And I thought, she was listening.
Oh my God.
And I think it was the first time I sort of realised that actually my talks do have an impact on them, even if they might look as if they're falling asleep. They are listening. So it made me realise that, you know, if I can just get one child to perhaps just sort of, I don't know, be inspired is the wrong word, but just one child to sort of listen and perhaps want to give something a go that's slightly extraordinary or just different when she grows up or is a teenager or whatever it is. Do you know, I will go and give lots of talks.
Absolutely.
So that was, and it was lovely because I really didn't think that she was listening. I thought she was fast asleep, and it was the nicest question I think I've ever been asked, and it made me feel quite tearful actually.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it's when we grow up, it's those moments in our childhood that really stick out. That we remember the really good teacher that made us believe in ourselves.
Absolutely.
Or got us to come out of our comfort zone and pushed us and was there to hold us if, you know, metaphorically to hold us if we fell, but really, or made learning fun, or or something a parent says, or it's those when you, and as an adult, and when you look back and you think, what has influenced me? And we go back to those things. I can remember my dad, when I was about 5, we were going chestnutting. We were coming up to chestnut season now, aren't we? For playing Conkers. And he used to take me to the library. And I can remember these fun times with him and going to the library. And I can remember, as you know, knee-high to a grasshopper, looking up at all these books. And he was saying, when you've learnt to read, all of these are full of adventures and excitement. Yes. And when you can read, you can find out about all of these adventures. Can I, Daddy? Can I? And it sort of went back, got the John books out. And when he was dying, I reminded him of that. And I said, you were my inspiration for reading.
Yes.
And I still love reading. So it's those. So, you know, when that little 8-year-old is 18 and she enters into her first running race, you will probably be in her mind because you were the inspiration for that.
I hope so. You know, it's a completely different story to my first one, but it was just nice to know.
Yeah. Really nice to know. Yeah.
Especially so young as well. I think that was the other thing, you know.
I had such an impression on her. And you created a ripple, didn't you? In that audience.
Absolutely.
And who knows where that ripple will take that little 8-year-old in the years to come and how it will change how she thinks of herself and what she's able to do. And it could be in her professional life.
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be sporting.
It can be anything. Amazing.
Yeah.
We've got a few minutes left. Can you just tell us about what the future holds for the amazing Mimi?
It's quite exciting, actually. I am in the process of planning a world record attempt next year,
right?
To run across America, so it'll be another Guinness World Record. Well, it's something that I've wanted to do. I watched a friend of mine, James Adams, in 2011. There's a race running across America, and I sort of watched him. He wrote a fantastic blog. He's actually now written a book, and he'll love the fact that he's had that planted. And I just thought, you know, I'd love to do that. Love to run across. You know, I've done the length of the UK, I've done the length of Ireland. Actually, wouldn't it be fantastic? It really is. It's not the ultimate, but it is one of the ultimate sort of long distance sort of runs. So I'm in the process of planning all of that at the moment, which is hard work.
Well, are you going east to west? West to
I'm
east?
Going west to east west because to east. My husband refuses to go to New York and take me to New York. So the only way I'm going to get there is to run. So that's all I'm going to have to do.
I love your inventiveness to get your husband to New York.
I mean, he said, can't you start in New York? I said, certainly not. I said, I need the incentive to run to New York, not away from it. So, yeah, so I'm very excited, very nervous because it's going to be the toughest challenge
doing it on your own?
Of my life. Yes, I'll have crew who will look after me during it. Good. So I've got to plan all of that as well. But
how long is it going to take you?
Well, I'm aiming for sort of under, sort of 50 days and under, which is a big ask, you know, so I'm not, not taking, you know, I'm absolutely know that it's going to be a huge ask.
What's the average miles per day?
I'm probably looking at anything between sort of 60, 70 miles a day.
Every day?
Every day.
Jeepers.
Every day, yeah. So the female record is just over 69 days.
Okay.
And then the male record is just over 46.
Okay.
And they were both set in sort of 78 and then 80 respectively. So it is, you know, it's completely different to joggle, you know, John O'Groats to Land's End, because obviously it's longer. And the sleep deprivation, I mean, that's what gets you, is, you know, yes, the mileage is going to be tough on your body and you're going to get aches and pains and injuries and you have to, you know, somehow get through that if you can. You can't always.
Sure.
But it's not getting, you know, if you get too slow, you're just not getting the time to sleep and to recoup. So, but my trainer is going to be, once I get back from Greece and had a bit of recovery from that, he'll be putting me into my training regime for the run across America. So,
and when is this happening?
September next year.
September next year, yeah. About a year's time.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, keep us updated.
Oh, I will.
The developments. I'd love to interview you again, perhaps in a year's time when you've done it and you can tell us about your experiences.
That would be fantastic.
And I'm going to leave you with one comment, going back to your first game changer. When it gets too tough running across America, just think of all the people who think you're not going to do it and you're going to fail.
I will.
So this has been Katie Day, and I want to thank Mimi Anderson hugely for a wonderful interview. Thank you for your time. You'd be really inspirational. This has been Creating Ripples, the programme where women over 50 are showcased as the fabulous, amazing and awesome human beings we are. Coming up in future weeks, we have Rosie, who at the age of 74 has just launched her own artisan perfume business. Pola, who originates from Bangladesh and is now a baroness in the UK Upper Houses of Parliament and runs an amazing charity on disability. And Maya Shahini from Mumbai in India, who has set up a management college for Indian children denied mainstream education. Plus many more wonderful and inspiring women with their unique stories. Make sure you tune in, and thank you for listening.